Chapter 56. The antechamber at the base of the North Tower stank overwhelmingly of blood and feces released in death. The bitter tang of urine threaded through the stench. Kylar gagged as he opened the barred door. A quick glance told the story. The men had been trapped in the room, ambushed by crossbowmen. Kylar scowled. A crossbowman? In a room this small? Then he saw the narrow platform by the ceiling, plainly visible in the shadows that now welcomed Kylar's eyes. From the way the bodies were scattered, it had just been the one man, shooting the royal guards and nobles like fish in a barrel. So this was what happened to the men who'd come to save their prince. From the streaks of blood going out the door, it looked like only one man had survived to drag himself away. Sickened, Kylar ran up the stairs. He found 6 dead Kalidorans at the entryway. The rest of the story was clear enough. Caught in bed with his wife, Logan's clothes were scattered around the room. Logan had sprung up and fought. He'd killed 6 fully armed Kalidorans, but from the burn marks on the floor, he'd been hurt or disabled with magic. Then, from the wide, sticky puddle of blood, it was obvious that Roth had either killed Logan slowly so that he bled copiously, or had killed both him and his wife. Neither body was in the room. The Kalidorans would want Logan's body along with the rest of the royal family's bodies, so the whole kingdom could see they were dead. The line of succession wiped out. A torn nightgown lay on the floor. The princess, young and beautiful as she was probably in a room somewhere being raped until she died of it. Kylar tried to interpret it another way. His mind analyzed the scene, trying to ward off the shock of despair. Was it possible the princess had been killed and Logan was alive? But soldiers wouldn't keep Logan alive and kill a princess whom they could rape. Logan was a warrior, a renowned swordsman, and the heir to the throne. The assassinations of the rest of the royal family had been carried out brutally, but precisely, carefully. If the Kalidorans were going to make an exception and spare one life for any length of time, it wouldn't be Logan's. Grief hit Kylar like a physical blow. Logan was dead. His best friend was dead. Dead. And the blame could only be placed on Kylar. He could have stopped it. Kylar could have killed Durzo last night. Durzo's back had been there, a target he couldn't miss. Dorian had told him. What pain hadn't he inflicted on Logan? He'd allowed the murder of Logan's friend, Aline, concealed the truth about Sira's and Aline's affair, got him sent to prison for murder, and forced him to break his engagement. Now, Logan had been forced to marry a girl he didn't know, and had been murdered. His wife, of less than an hour, raped and killed. Sinking to the floor, Kylar wept.
Logan, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, it's all my fault.
He reached a hand to steady himself and found it in the puddle of blood. He looked at his bloody, bloody hand. Bloody, as it had been bloodied in this very chamber 5 years ago when he finished his first solo kill. Bloody, as it had been bloody continually since he murdered his first innocent. This was where murder had brought him. It had brought him full circle, his murder of one innocent leading inexorably to the murder of more. In the last 5 years, he'd done exactly what he'd intended to do. He'd become more and more like Durzo Blint. He'd become a killer. He slept uneasily, so he slept light, so he was ever more dangerous. He was always on edge, and the blood that first covered his hands in this very room had never been washed clean. It had only been added to. It was no mistake that Logan's blood was on his hands now. No coincidence. The Drakes liked to talk about a divine economy, the god turning weeping into laughter, sorrow into joy. A wet boy was the merchant prince of the satanic economy. Murder begat murder, and as Durzo had said, others always paid the price. Must others always pay for my failures? Is there no other way? The blood on his hands said no. No. This is reality. It's hard, uncomfortable, hateful. But it's true.
I'm breaking my own rules.
A blur of shadows said. Kylar didn't look up. He didn't care if he died. But the man said no more. After a long moment, Kylar asked bitterly,
Don't play fair. A kill is a kill.
Durzo stepped out of the shadows.
Kylar, I have one last rule to teach you.
And what's that, Master?
You're almost a wet boy now, Kylar. And now that you've learned to win almost any fight, there's one more rule. Never fight when you can't win.
Fine, Kylar said. You win.
Durzo stood there a long moment.
Come, apprentice. Here is your crucible.
Is that all your life is?
Kylar asked, finally looking up.
Tests and challenges?
My life? That's all life is.
That's not good enough, Kylar said.
These people shouldn't be dying. Kalidor shouldn't be winning. It's not right. I never said it's right. My world isn't cut into black and white, right and wrong, Kylar. Yours shouldn't be either. Our world only has better and worse. Shadows lighter and darker. Cenaria couldn't win against Kalidor no matter what happened tonight. This way a few nobles die rather than tens of thousands of peasants. It's better this way.
Better?
My best friend's dead and they're probably raping his wife. How can you stand by and do nothing?
How can you help them?
Because life's empty, Durzo said.
Bullshit! If you believed that, you'd have died a long time ago.
I did die a long time ago. All the good passes by, and all the evil passes by, and we can't do a damn thing to change anything or anybody, Kylar, least of all ourselves. This war will come and go. There will be a victor, and people will die for nothing, but we'll be alive. Like always. At least, I will.
It's not right.
What do you want, justice? Justice is a fairy tale, a myth with soft fur and reassuring strength.
A myth you believed in, once upon a time, Kylar said, gesturing to the word justice etched into Retribution's blade.
I used to believe a lot of things. That doesn't make them true, Durzo said.
Who's better off? Logan or us? Logan could sleep at night. I hate myself. I dream of murder and wake in cold sweat. You drink yourself oblivious and blow your money on whores.
Logan's dead, Durzo said. Maybe he'll wear a crown in the next life, but that doesn't do him much good now, does it?
Kylar looked at Durzo strangely.
And you're the one who says life is empty, meaningless, that we don't take anything of value when we take a life. Look how you hold on to yours, you fucking hypocrite.
Every man worth a damn is a hypocrite.
Durzo reached into a breast pocket and pulled out a folded scrap of paper.
If you kill me, this is for you. It explains things. Consider it your inheritance. If I kill you, well, when I die, I'll take a break on my way to the lowest plane of hell and stop to talk.
Durzo tucked the paper in a breast pocket and drew a huge sword with a long red ribbon dangling from its hilt. It was a longer, heavier blade than Retribution, but with his talent, Durzo could wield it with a single hand.
"Don't do this," Kylar said. "I don't want to fight you."
The wet boy closed on him. Kylar stood still, making no move to defend himself.
"Did you already give him the globe of edges?" Kylar asked.
The wet boy stopped. He reached into a pouch and pulled out the silvery globe. "This?" he said. "This is nothing. Another fake." He hurled the globe at the window. Glass broke as it punched through the window and sailed out into darkness.
"What have you done?" Kylar asked.
"By the Night Angels," Durzo said. "You bonded my Kakari. You stole it from me. You still don't understand?"
It was like he was speaking another language. Bonded? Kylar thought he'd bonded the Kakari, must have, because his talent worked now. And Durzo said it was glass?
"Unbelievable," Durzo said, shaking his head. "Draw your sword and fight, boy."
"It's my sword now, is it?" Kylar asked.
"Not for long. You aren't worthy to succeed me."
Durzo raised his blade.
"I don't want to fight you," Kylar said, refusing to draw the blade. "I won't fight you."
Durzo struck. At the last second, Kylar drew retribution and blocked. Talent-strengthened blow met talent-strengthened blow. The blades shivered from the impact.
"I knew it was in you," Durzo said.
He smiled fiercely. Any delusion Kylar might have had that Durzo would take it easy on him because he hadn't had time to learn to use his talent dissolved instantly. Durzo launched into a blistering attack so fast it should have been impossible. Kylar staggered backward, blocking some blows and jumping back to avoid more. Durzo used every weapon in his arsenal. His sword blurred through combinations, whipping the hilt ribbon into a scintillant red stream. The ribbon's purpose was to pull an opponent's eye from the point of danger. Anyone who let his attention wander would find a steel reminder in his ribs. But it wasn't just the sword that confused Kylar. Durzo would follow a cut at Kylar's head with a kick at his knee, then a spinning backhand with his free hand at his face. Combinations followed and flowed into each other in a raging river of deadly motion. Blocking and dodging, Kylar retreated back and back. Durzo didn't give him time to think, but Kylar was aware of the room. It took up the entire top floor of the tower, so it formed a large circle flattened at one end for the entrance and at the other for a closet. The very familiarity of fighting against Durzo slowly calmed him. Of course, he'd always lost, but things would be different this time. They had to be. The surge of power flowed through his arms with a rush of tingles that made him feel like every hair on his body was standing on end. He parried a thrust, and Durzo's blade was slapped aside as if it weighed a quarter of what it did. Blint recovered in a blink, but he stopped advancing. Kylar was standing a yard from the wall with a cherrywood bureau next to him. Blint's sword flicked toward his eyes, but it was a feint. Blint's real attack was a kick at Kylar's leading knee. Kylar dropped backward toward the wall and lashed out with a foot, halting Blint's foot as it came forward. Expecting his sword to meet resistance, Blint slashed too hard. His heavy blade slashed deeply into the bureau. The stone wall slapped against Kylar's back as he stumbled and levered himself upright again. But instead of trying to drag his sword out of the bureau, Durzo reached over his shoulders and grabbed twin hook swords. Each bore a crescent-shaped blade over the knuckles, but was otherwise a normal sword with a hooked point for catching an enemy's sword.
"I hate those," Kylar said.
"I know."
Kylar attacked, still trying to adjust to the talent's effect on his fighting. So far as he could tell, It could make his muscles move more quickly and more powerfully, but there was a limit to how fast even two talented fighters could fight. The talent didn't help you make decisions faster, so it wasn't a simple matter of accelerating regular fighting. Kylar had to be more careful, and he still had no idea if the talent would defend his body itself. If Blint got through Kylar's defenses with a talent-aided kick, would it crush his ribs like twigs, or were they strengthened as well? The only way to find out was no way to find out. Blint let Kylar come forward, using the hook swords defensively. Then, as they neared the bed, he started using the hooks. As Kylar struck, Durzo turned his blade down to the hook and wrenched Retribution aside. He followed with an overhead slash with the other sword. Leaping backward, Kylar found himself being driven toward one of the tower's broad windows. Durzo strode in and caught a slow slash, but instead of sweeping it aside, he caught it with his other hook, trapping Kylar's blade. As Kylar lunged forward, Blint guided the blade past his head and wrenched it free. Retribution clattered on the floor behind Kylar. Blint kicked him in the chest, his foot barely slowed by the arms Kylar brought up as he drew daggers. Kylar slammed into the window and felt glass break, wood splinter, and the latch burst. He had the sickening sensation of launching into space. Clawing for something, anything, Kylar turned, twisting with the desperate grace of a falling cat. Abandoned to gravity, his daggers spun away, glittering in the moonlight. Kylar punched his fingers through a delicate window pane. His hand clamped on wood and jagged glass as his momentum swung the window open. His face met the tower wall with a crunch. Glass glided through the flesh of his fingers, then ground against bone as his hand slipped. Held. Blinking, he dangled by one hand. Blood coursed down his arm. Blood coursed down his face. He hung 200 feet over the basalt of the castle's foundation and the broad expanse of the river. Steam escaped from the single volcanic vent that opened on Voss Island and obscured a barge pulled up to the shore. The steam shone in the moonlight, and far below, by the ship, Kylar saw men talking. Even from this height, he could hear the ringing of steel and catch glimpses of Caladoran invaders overwhelming foot soldiers in the castle courtyard. Then, Sergeant Gamble emerged from the front gate. He was leading the nobles and more than 200 Cenarian soldiers. They were trying to escape the castle, just as Kylar had told them. But even as they pushed toward the east gate, the Caladorans were reinforced by more than 100 Highlanders coming from the opposite side of the castle. In seconds, the courtyard had become the front line of the battle and the war for Cenaria. The castle and the city were lost. If the nobles were slaughtered, so was all of Cenaria. If the nobles could press through the massed Highlanders and get across East King's Bridge, they could begin a resistance. It was the dimmest sort of hope, but hope had never come in the blinding bright variety in Cenaria. Something popped, and Kylar dropped 4 inches. He scrambled up the window frame as the next hinge tore out of the sill. The last hinge protested and popped out. Kylar hurled himself at the storm shutter, tied back against the tower wall. His fingers raked over slats, caught. 3 slats broke, and then finally arrested his fall. The window sailed peacefully below him, turning end over end in the whistling wind. It hit the rocks just paces short of the river, exactly where Kylar would land, if he fell. The window exploded into splinters and slivers of glass. Kylar looked up. The shutter's hinges were straining, slowly pulling out of the rock. Perfect. Durzo Blint stood in the carnage and saw none of it. Bodies were strewn about the bedchamber. Freshly cut lilies bloomed next to the royal bed, white lilies, flecked red with blood. A delicate, once white nightgown lay soaking in a wide pool of crimson near his feet. The floor mosaic was scorched in a black circle, the acrid tang of witchfire smothered the hint of perfume in the air. But Durzo saw only the open window in front of him. His pockmarked face looked stricken. Wind howled through the window, sending the curtains fluttering and his gray hair into his eyes. His fingers flipped a blade, end over end in his right hand. Finger to finger to finger. Stop. Finger to finger to finger. Spin. He noticed what he was doing and jammed the dagger into a sheath. His face set, and he pulled his mottled gray and black cloak around his shoulders, covering a belt full of darts, daggers, and numerous tools and pouches. It wasn't supposed to end like this. It wasn't supposed to be so empty. He turned his back to the window, then stopped. His head cocked to the side as he heard something over the screaming wind. Kylar willed himself to release the shutter with his bloody right hand. His hand found empty sheaths for daggers that matched the empty scabbard on his back. Grunting, he contorted himself to draw a tanto from his calf. His fingers were deadened, lacerated, weak. The tanto almost slipped out of them. The ropes tying the shutter against the wall parted easily. Rusty hinges creaked loudly. Kylar stiffened, but there was no help for the noise. He took two quick breaths, then launched off the tower wall with both feet. He swung back toward the opened window and heaved his body up with the force of his talent as if he was swinging on a giant swing. The shutter tore away from the tower in his hands, and he barely made it high enough not to slam into the wall, instead sliding into the bedchamber along the floor. His body swept Durzo's feet out from under him, and the wet boy fell on top of Kylar, one of his hook swords going flying out the window. The shutter was between them, trapping Durzo's hands in an awkward position. Kylar slapped the shutter into Durzo's face.
"I don't!"
Kylar slammed the shutter into Durzo's face with all of his strength and talent. The man flew off him. Kylar rolled aside and jumped to his feet. But Blint was already up. He kicked a footstool at Kylar. Kylar blocked it with a foot, but it caught him off balance and tripped him. He landed face first on a decorative rug. Running forward like lightning, Blint raised the hook sword. Instead of trying to stand or roll aside, Kylar grabbed the rug and yanked. Durzo lurched forward faster than he expected and cut only air as his knees collided with Kylar's shoulder. He flipped over head first. Durzo's heavy curved sword was still lodged in the bureau next to the window, but retribution was closer. Kylar grabbed it and turned.
"Want to—"
The wet boy lunged to grab the hook sword off the ground.
"Fight you!"
Kylar jumped on the hook sword. Durzo pulled up with all the strength of his talent. For an instant, it seemed the iron core of the blade would hold. Then the sword snapped an inch from the hilt.
"You might not want to, son, but there's something in you that refuses to die,"
Durzo said. He threw the broken blade aside, but didn't draw any other weapons.
"Master, don't make me fight you,"
Kylar said, pointing the blade at Durzo's throat.
"You made your choice when you disobeyed me."
"Why'd you do it?"
"I wouldn't have apprenticed you, but I thought you were something you're not. May the Night Angels forgive me."
"I don't mean me."
Kylar's hands shook on the sword.
"Why'd you make me betray my best friend?"
"Because you broke the rules.
Because life's empty. Because I broke rules, too.
Durzo shrugged.
It catches up.
That's not good enough.
Durzo tented his hands and pursed his lips.
Logan died screaming, you know. Pathetic.
Kylar lashed out. The sword streaked for Durzo's neck, but Durzo didn't flinch. The blade slapped into his palm and stopped as if it didn't even have an edge. But Durzo's hands were still tented in front of him. The hand holding Kylar's sword was made of pure magic. It flung retribution out of Kylar's grip. Other hands bloomed in the air, striking at him. Kylar blocked and stumbled back as Durzo walked forward calmly, surging with talent. There was nothing Kylar could do. He blocked faster and faster, but the hands came faster still. Dimly, a few hands of his own talent bloomed in front of him and blocked some of the attacks, but it wasn't enough. Durzo drove him back and back. Finally, hands latched onto each of Kylar's limbs and pinned him to the wall. He couldn't move an inch.
"Ah, kid," Durzo said. "If I could have taught you to use your talent, you'd have been something really special."
Durzo drew a throwing dagger, spun it in his fingers, brought it up. He paused as if to say something, then shook his head.
"I'm sorry, Kylar."
"Don't be.
Life's empty, right?"
Durzo sighed. He was staring at retribution, gleaming blackly at Kylar's feet, as close as the moonlight, and as far away as the moon. The look on his scarred face was anguish. Regret. Following his gaze, Kylar stared at the black sword that Durzo had carried for so many years, and remembered. Scowling, Durzo had snatched the pouch away from him and turned it over. The globe of edges fell into his hand.
"Damn, just what I thought," he said,
his voice harsh in the quiet of the Jadwin hallway.
"What?"
Kylar asked. It was a fake. Another fake Kakari. But Durzo wasn't in any mood to answer questions.
"Did the girl see your face?"
Kylar's silence was enough.
"Take care of it. Kylar, that's not a request. It's an order. Kill her."
"No,"
Kylar said.
"What did you say?"
Durzo asked, incredulous. Black blood was dribbling down retribution, pooling on the floor.
"I won't kill her, and I won't let you. Who is this girl that she's worth being hunted for the rest of your short?"
He stopped.
"She's Doll Girl."
"Yes, master." "I'm sorry."
"By the night angels, I don't want apologies, I want obedient—"
Durzo held up a finger for silence. The footfalls were close now. Durzo blurred into the hall, inhumanly fast, his sword flashing silver in the low light.
His sword flashed silver?
Retribution's blade is black. There was the sound of something metallic rolling across marble toward Kylar. He raised a hand and felt the Kakari slap into his outstretched palm.
"No! No! It's mine!"
Blint yelled. The Kakari pooled like black oil in an instant. What had Durzo just said? The silver was another fake. "You stole my Kakari. Not a silver Kakari at all, a black Kakari. The Kakari Durzo had been carrying for years, hidden, covering the blade of retribution. The Kakari choose their own masters. For some reason, the black Kakari had chosen Kylar. Maybe had chosen him years ago, the day Durzo had beaten him for seeing Doll Girl again. That day, when a blue glow had surrounded the black blade. When Durzo had shouted, "No, not that, it's mine!" as incandescent blue fire had burned into Kylar's fingers,
Durzo had thrown it away from Kylar, so Kylar couldn't complete the bond. Because once Kylar completed the bond, Kylar wouldn't call the Silver Kakari for Durzo. Now they knew he hadn't called it, because it had been a fake. There had never been any Kakari in the city, except Durzo's black. And Durzo had known from that very day that if he let Kylar live, the black Kakari was lost to him forever. Durzo had even left it for him tonight, so that Kylar would have a chance. But now, it was too late. Durzo looked like there was more he wanted to say to Kylar, some way he wanted to vent his anguish. But he'd never been a man of words. Instead, mere paces away, he hurled the knife at Kylar's face. Time didn't slow. The world didn't contract to the point of the spinning knife. But despair flash-boiled in the heat of an insane hope in Kylar's heart. He didn't even notice his hand come up, didn't know how it had broken free, couldn't say how the Kakari had gone from the blade on the floor into his hand. It was just there. In that unslowed fraction of a second, black goo flipped from his fingertips and splattered across the knife, spinning toward his chest like spit against pavement. When Kylar looked again, the knife was just gone. Ting! Kylar looked down to see what had made the sound. The Kakari was rolling across the floor, coming toward him. It wobbled as it rolled, and when it climbed up his boot and dissolved into his skin, Kylar felt a rush of power. With a mental shrug, Kylar burst through the phantasmal hands holding him to the wall. Settling smoothly on his feet, he extended a hand toward his old master and released the power arcing through him. Durzo was hurled away as if all the force of a hurricane had been unleashed in his face. He tumbled end over end, sliding and rolling across the room until he slapped against the wall. With the talent, Kylar caught up retribution and brought it to his hand.
"Don't fight when you can't win," Kylar said. "And don't fight when you don't want to win. Right?"
Durzo struggled to his feet and stood, weaponless. He took a ready position and smirked.
"Sometimes you have to fight."
"Not this time," Kylar said.
He raised the sword and came forward at a run. Durzo didn't move. He just looked Kylar in the eye, ready. At the last second, Kylar dodged to the side and dove through the window into the moonlit air whipping the North Tower. One of those men on the boat had been Roth.